Hey friends, welcome to another Thursday here on the Unseminary Podcast. So glad that you have tuned in today. You're going to love today's podcast, I think, because it really diving into some of the internal metrics of really choosing momentum at your church. This also reminds me that, you know, one of the key parts of building momentum is building future leaders and really building a pipeline, or you'd say a pathway for that. And our friends over at Leadership Pathway have a proven plan to do that. Leadership Pathway helps churches like yours by beginning a residency program or taking your internship program to a whole nother level. Surely you've stopped and thought, maybe even wondered, maybe been forced to think, where is the next staff leader coming from? Well, Leadership Pathway answers that question by helping churches like you develop the pipelines that are required through internal residency programs. Man, it is amazing. I love these guys. Think of them kind of like headhunters for residents, but that's not all. They'll not only find the resident for you, give you some candidates, but they'll coach your staff on how to develop that resident through the entire 1 year or 2 year experience to make them highly desirable and hireable. That's really their only goal, is really to work and really build students. And they're doing this now with dozens and dozens of churches, and we really want you to reach out to them today to find out more information. What I want you to do is go to leadershippathway.org/unseminary, where you could book a call with my friend Dave, and he'd love to dive in and hear more about your church and see if this is a fit. Again, it's leadershippathway.org/unseminary. Thanks so much, friends. Now let's dive into this fascinating conversation with Eric Smith.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey friends, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Super excited that you've decided to tune in. Listen, I know you've got a lot going on, and the fact that you would tune us in every week is amazing. So thank you for doing that. You're going to be rewarded for that. We've got a friend of the show, second time on the show, Eric Smith. Super glad to have Eric with us. Eric's a great church leader who's had a few changes, doing some new things, and I want to make sure that you are up to speed on that. Eric, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me again.
No, I'm so glad that you're here. Why don't you give us the Eric story? Kind of tell us a little bit about your background. Talk about your kind of church leadership experience. Let's talk about those things, and then we'll jump in on what what you've been up to recently.
Yeah, sounds great. So I guess my experience it all began in college. I started working, you know, as an intern, and did that for a while, and then was a youth pastor for about 6 years, almost 7 years. And really the big change that happened to me was I got an opportunity to serve when I was in seminary in Kansas City at Westside Family Church in Lenexa, where I think Randy Frazee's the pastor there now. And it was just an incredible opportunity. It was a purpose-driven church, and it just exposed me to ideas I had never heard before, and it really transformed my ministry moving forward. And then within a couple years after that, I planted a church. I'd moved to Jackson, Mississippi. I'd actually gone to college in Jackson, so had friends there, and my wife was doing her residency. She's a physician, so she was doing her residency there at the University Medical Center in Jackson, and we moved there, and the Lord called us to plant a church, and we had no idea what we were doing, 10 people, and no right. money, and it was crazy, man. We launched the church 6 months after we started developing our launch team, and we had close to 250 people. And we were meeting on an indoor football field,
At really? That's cool.
Velocity Sports Performance. It's kind of like, there's also another company in the U.S. that does something similar. That's called D1. Anyway, so I'm preaching on like the 10-yard line, you know, and it was so cool.
And in the red zone.
That's right. In the red zone. So we saw God do just an incredible work through that. And, We launched our second campus 2 years later and had no idea what we were doing, but we were just going after it. And we ended up with four locations. And then a year after I started the church, I had really leaned on a lot of the guys who had planted churches in the area, but there really wasn't a network. There really wasn't a strategy to assess and train planters. And I gathered some of my buddies together, and of course, I was the youngest guy, and they were all more experienced than me. And I said, we really need to start a church planting network. And they said, sounds great. You do it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So we started this church planting network, and it was pretty amazing. It's still going today. It's called the 242 Network. It actually oversees all of church planting, assessing and training for the Mississippi Baptist. So they're in partnership with the Mississippi Baptist Convention, which is a pretty large convention. Wow.
Yeah,
and so,
totally.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be the director of that and lead that at the same time I was pastoring the church. So I loved it. We were juggling a lot of balls, seeing God do incredible things. It was pretty wild and crazy, and just having a blast. And we put on a conference, and the Lord, through that conference, brought a lot of established pastors to the conference, the 242 conference we had put on. And through that, I started getting a burden for established churches. To help them go to the next level. I'd been in the church planting world at that point for 7 years, and that was kind of everything I lived, breathed, ate. That's all I thought about. And little did I know, a few months later, the Lord would give me the opportunity to move to Alabama. And Pastor Vaughn Forrest Church, which was a really dynamic church in the late 90s and early 2000s, but had been on an 8-year decline, had massive amount of debt, was a pretty crazy situation. Actually, when I stepped into it, I'd never been in a more toxic, kind of angry environment among the people. And it's because they had experienced 8 years of decline and a lot of debt, almost $20 million in debt. It was pretty crazy. And it was
crazy.
Unbelievable. We talked about that in the last time I was with you, but you know, almost years after being there, we became, I think, the 55th fastest growing church in America. And it was just kind of one of those crazy God things. And anyway, and then this past several months, I had taken them to where I felt like I was supposed to take them after a few years of being there. Church was still thriving, doing great, but it was time for not a crazy church planter got to be there, but my feeling was they needed somebody to come in and really be a long tenured pastor for the next season. And, and the Lord was calling me to step out and do what I'm doing now, which is help consult, train, and coach churches and really helping churches go to the next level. So that's kind of the next season for me and what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, the reason, so thanks, Eric, for kind of pulling the lens back and giving the kind of broad spectrum there of everything you've been involved in. I think hopefully as people are listening, you're like, hey, Eric's been around. He's seen a lot. He's seen a bunch of different kind of iterations of the local church, which I think makes you invaluable for really giving a good perspective on kind of what helps churches take the next step to grow healthy, to, you know, be the kind of churches that prevail in their culture. If you had to kind of break down, say, one or two key elements that you've seen repeatedly over your career, over your time serving, that you've just seen as kind of are critical pieces of the puzzle for churches that are making a difference, what would some of those things be? What are some of those things that you think, hey, God just keeps seem to be using to make a difference in, you know, in a local church?
Yeah. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've probably made more mistakes than things I've done right. And so I've just tried to learn from those. Mm-hmm. But as I've seen other friends and guys that I just observe from a distance, it seems to be the churches that are willing to do what's hard and really to do what's healthy. I believe, now I'm a big believer that style matters and being relevant and making sure you're contextually effective in the culture that you're in, all those pieces. But there's churches that are even culturally relevant and contextualizing well, but they're unhealthy. And either the bottom falls out or they don't, you know, have sustainable growth or, you know, it's just implodes. And so for me, really choosing to do what's healthy, but you know, to be healthy is hard. Think about your own personal life. It's hard to eat healthy. It's hard to exercise. True. Well, it's hard to be healthy in a church, but once you build those disciplines to eat healthy, to have a regimen of exercise, you know, it becomes kind of part of your life's culture. And I think the same is true for a church. Whenever you devote yourself to do what's healthy, to remove divisiveness, to choose to be positive and focus on the wins and to really do the right thing for your church and for the leadership, that begins to become part of the culture of the life of the church. And it begins to shift. It's the same way. I mean, we are the body, right? So right, the same way our right. physical body, I believe it's our spiritual body is there's a lot of connections there. Mm-hmm. And so, that's the biggest factor, you know?
Yeah. I'd love to dive into that a little bit. Can you give me some, first of all, I think that's a great, the kind of paradigm of, you know, churches, the thing that seems to differentiate churches that are prevailing and those that are maybe lagging are, you know, prevailing churches are choose to do what's hard and healthy, to make a difference in their community. Can you give me some examples from your ministry past where, you know, there was an easier path and you chose the hard and healthy path rather than the, it would have been easier to do this. Do you have some examples of that you can, you know, picture? Or it might be other churches that you've worked with where you've seen like, oh, wow, like they, good for them to take the courage to, you know, to make that difference, to try something, you know, hard and healthy.
Sure. I think, the most recent experience with Vaughn Forest, you know, 8 years of decline, and there were some pretty divisive folks that were there. And, you know, when you come into a place, we all want people to like us. I mean, it's kind of, and I like people and I want people to like me. I don't like to fight or to be, I don't like to have to be at odds with people because, you know, sometimes when you have that, it can develop unforgiveness in your heart. And I really believe that affects the anointing of God in our lives when when we have unforgiveness in our hearts. I don't want to live with that. So it's tough because when you step into a toxic environment or a challenging situation, a lot of times what we do is we just ignore it because we don't want to deal with all those emotions. And so just dealing with some of the challenging folks and sitting down eye to eye with people and saying, you know, you can't do that. And you're not going to do it anymore because this church is bigger than you and it's bigger than me. This is about Jesus and this is about his kingdom. And God's called me here and our team here to lead this church to a better future. And you're invited on that journey, but you're not going to be on the journey if you're going to do that. And
that's good.
And that can be somebody just being divisive or being out of alignment or whatever it might be. And those conversations are hard. I mean, I have no desire to have those conversations, but I've come to believe that if you're unwilling to have those conversations, it will destroy your ministry. It will destroy your church. And so you have the choice, do what's hard or do what's easy. If you do what's hard, there's going to be some repercussions then, but I just believe God honors that. Mm-hmm. And in the long term, in the long run, it will come back and it will bless you. And plus you'll just have a healthier environment. I would rather be a little smaller as a church for a little while and be healthy and have cancer removed. Than be bloated with cancer all over my body and just go, we'll just keep the cancer because we're bigger this way.
True.
You know, tumors are big, but you want to remove tumors.
Right. Absolutely. No, I think that's great. And I think we all can probably, if we're honest, when we think about our churches and we think about, man, there's this one kind of unhealthy relationship that maybe just isn't, it could be dragging down. Maybe it's a particularly negative leader, or it's a leader that's maybe too self-centered, or there's a bit of ego there, that we just know the Lord isn't honoring. But, you know, I like when you said, you know, when people say that, oh, I'm a people pleaser. And like, they say that, like, that's an exceptional thing. Like there's not a lot of people who do that. I'm like, aren't all people pleasers? Like, who are the megalomaniacs that are out there? Like, I'm the person that doesn't want people to like me. Like, that's a minority of people out there. Most people find themselves in that kind of, I want to help. I want people to think that things are good. But I think it's a good word of encouragement to us even. Hey, there may be people that are blocking what the Lord wants to do. And we need to step in and deal with the, you know, culture piece. And some of that is actually dealing with individuals. Now, I can imagine over time, you know, in the churches you've served in, this whole idea of, you know, culture and developing the way our church does things, the way, you know, the way we make things happen, it's just critically important. I just saw a leader recently say, you know, culture isn't more important than strategy. Culture is the strategy. It's the thing that we need to be thinking about. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, how you've been involved in kind of both testing your culture, understanding, hey, where are things at in the culture in the church that I'm a part of? But then also trying to steer that towards the kind of culture that attracts people, sees people get plugged in, and ultimately sees, you know, the church prevail.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think church, no matter how small or large, it's a team, right? It's a team. And that starts with the leadership. But then, I mean, when you think about even you've served in very large churches, you understand this. I mean, if you don't have the team dynamic, it doesn't matter even how big you are. It can be detrimental. And so I go back to, Lencioni's five dysfunctions of a team. I've always loved that. And so to me, looking at those five areas and looking, okay, from the beginning, is our senior leadership, are we united? Do we have a healthy team? Is there dysfunction among us? And then you have to go through every level and evaluate that to determine, is this a healthy team? And I think obviously that has huge implications on the connection with your culture. Because your team's who's doing the things you're doing, and culture is how you do things. It's what you value. So if those things are off, then you don't have a healthy culture. So,
Yeah, I love that. I think that, sometimes I know I've said in environments I've served in that, there's a little bit of at your core, whether that's, the core leadership team for the staff or the elders, however you articulate that at your church, there's a little bit of like, if it's not working here, why do we think it's going to work in the rest of the church? Like if we're not experiencing, if the people in that circle aren't experiencing what we're hoping that the church will ultimately see people experience, I don't know. I think we're stuck. We're not going to move forward. If that group of people aren't, inviting friends and seeing those friends take steps closer to Christ, if that group isn't being challenged regularly with what it means to follow Jesus and to live a life in service to Him, then, why do we anticipate then that people who are on the fringes of this thing are actually going to get plugged in? I love that. I think that's a great kind of word around, hey, how do we, it kind of starts with, with where we kind of our core group and then moves beyond that. When you think about some of the pain points of, I loved earlier you said, hey, I've made some mistakes along the way. I've articulated that in a similar way where I've said, hey, I've paid the stupid tax. There's no need for you to pay it again. What would you say, because you've led in some prevailing churches. When you think about, your most recent assignment, where would you say are some of those areas where, hey, here's a thing where I stubbed my toe that I don't want other churches to stub their toes. Here's an area where we maybe made a misstep that, hey, we want you to avoid that. What would be some of those pain points?
Oh man. Oh, there's so many. Okay. So, I want to be careful not to get in too much detail, but
yeah, no, I understand that
in the church that we started, with our second location, we lost the property because we didn't, we had a document, that was signed, but it wasn't firm enough. And so I look back and ended up having to relocate that campus, and it was good. It was a bad, bad thing. And it was really detrimental. And I made a major mistake by not doing enough due diligence and getting the right information and documents. So I learned though that if I'm ever helping somebody and they're trying to acquire a space and they're working with another church or even another organization, make sure that you cover all your bases. Don't take somebody's word for it. I know that sounds bad. It's tough, but when you're talking about major property, you've just got to think through that. And then another one was we ended up with the church. We were launching our third campus, and a good friend of mine, we ended up doing a merger and acquired another with another property. Actually, ended up changing our name, and it was a really great thing, and God did some cool stuff. But he and I underestimated how hard that was going to be.
Right.
I mean, so I've not only planted and helped revitalize, but have dealt with property stuff and mergers and those kind of things. And so, yeah, just underestimating the challenge of that. So. That was not a mistake by any means. I believe that was a God thing to do, but he and I both have talked about it. Wow, we underestimated the challenge of what that would bring. And so those are some areas.
Well, there's no doubt. I think, whenever we're involved in leadership, there's the, what is a mistake? It's something that maybe we didn't anticipate was going to go the way it went, but then the Lord in his graciousness often takes those and then reuses them and catapults us into a different direction. And, you know, obviously everything, you know, is an opportunity to see the Lord do something great. And so that's our hope in the midst of, even when we make those, you know, mistakes. Now, I know you've thought about momentum a lot as a leader, and how do churches gain? How do we capture momentum? How do we focus it, kind of accelerate it? Why is momentum so important in a local church? Why is that, you know, a big deal? Why should we be thinking about that as church leaders?
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, a lot of guys and church leaders that are going to be listening to this, they're going to be going, I don't even have any momentum. So how do I even get the ball rolling, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's that step one is to figure out how to cultivate and get momentum. And I believe that's usually a systematic issue and a culture issue. And so, which those things are obviously connected. You just made that quote a minute ago about systems and culture, or, you know, strategy and culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think those two pieces are really important to get it going and to keep the momentum going. I think you've got to have the right systems to continue to methodically move the football down the field, if you will, toward the end zone. And not only that, but you've also got to have the right system to continue to cultivate the right culture. And as new people move into your church, right, they go from, you know, I saw you online to now I'm a guest to now I want to go through your next steps class or whatever it is that you do and become part of this. You've got to make sure that you've got the right systems to use the word, I don't know if I like it or not, but to assimilate them into the culture so that the culture can continue to thrive and get healthy, and to make sure there's clarity around where you're trying to go and who you're trying to be and what you're trying to do. So to me, it's about how do you actually get the ball rolling, but then also how do you keep it rolling? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, that's right. Good. I totally agree with you. I think momentum is an underappreciated, understood resource for most church leaders. It's the kind of thing, it's hard to attain. It's easy to lose. Now there's a natural yes. entropy that happens. You know, things are naturally winding down and slowing down. And if we're not thinking about what systems are we doing to add momentum into what's happening over time, things wind down. And, you know, I've had the privilege, the honor to sit with, as you have as well, to sit with churches that are in their dying days, literally they're deciding to close the door. And, you know, those are humbling experiences because you end up learning a bit of the story and you realize, wow, like it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that really negative momentum or entropy set in, and it becomes very difficult to turn around. And there's this long slide that takes place in so many churches. If there's a church leader that's listening in today and they sense, oh, we don't have momentum, you know, we're in this kind of, we're not maybe in decline yet, but we're just kind of stuck. What would you say would be kind of a first step that, or a first step or two that church leaders should be taking or thinking about taking towards building momentum in their locations?
Oh, the first thing is to read my new book called Momentum.
Yes, absolutely, for sure.
Well, I think you've got to evaluate your situation. So you've got to take a look at what's going on. Because it goes back to where we started, right? Are there some unhealthy things that are creating barriers that are keeping us from getting this momentum? And so how do we remove those barriers? How do we get to a healthy, you know, spot so that we can begin to gain some momentum? I mean, these are very complex things, and I wish they were super simple, but each church is unique, and I think there's a lot of art in leadership, right? So leadership is very much an art form, and navigating your way through. I think a lot of it has to do with building relational trust and having a plan around how do you actually build the trust with people, which is Lencioni's foundation for a team, right? Is the absence of trust is the first dysfunction. So you got to have this foundation of trust, and you got to know who are the right people to bring into that so that you can begin to shift this situation from, hey, we're stuck, to, hey, we're getting some traction. We're beginning to move. We're beginning to get some momentum here. And so, you know, on my website, I have a culture audit. It's 20 questions you get every team member to take. And that's one way just to evaluate, like, really, what is our culture? Because a lot of times I think we just ignore what's happening because we don't want to deal with the problem. But if you want to get better, you got to deal with the situation. You just have to. And it's hard, but you got to do it.
Right. I love that. So the thing I take away from that is that idea, right? The first step as a leader is to define reality, right? Like the first step is like, where are we today? You know, and I think what can be really insidious in churches wherein we are experiencing a bit of that kind of malaise, things aren't very good, is it's actually a comfortable place for most people. It actually feels like, oh, like this is okay. And so this idea of, hey, why don't we do an audit? Why don't we, you know, get a bit of outside help? Can you tell us a little bit of what is that? Tell us a little bit more about the audit, because that might be a great first step for people to say, hey, why don't you send them to your website, get a chance to kind of talk through their culture. That might be a first practical step. What is the culture audit? What does it look like? What do people get? How does that work?
Sure. So it's 20 simple questions. Mm-hmm. And it was really inspired, honestly, because Pat Lencioni has had a huge impact on me, not only from Five Dysfunctions of a Team, but The Advantage, and I've heard him speak a lot. I really have gained a lot from his work. And so that kind of inspired me, along with just some practical things I had seen, to develop this audit that would evaluate five specific areas. And so it's 20 questions. It kind of scores those five different areas. And the five areas then kind of expose maybe a weak point. You may be strong in one area that it scores, but weak in another area. So that's what it does, and I think it can be really helpful just to kind of take a look at, okay, where are we? Because sometimes your culture might be strong in a couple spots, but then there's a couple weak points, and then that kind of erodes the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so the culture audit just does that. So you can go to Momentum Swing. Mm-hmm. So the website, I know people like Momentum Swing. You know, I'm a sports guy. So you've been watching a basketball game or a football game or whatever, and there's a Momentum Swing. So that's what we want to do in our churches, right?
Right.
We want to have Momentum Swing. So it's MomentumSwing.net, because Momentum.com has been bought. And it's like $50,000.
So, right.
That's not available. But MomentumSwing.net, and it's right there when you go to the website. It's a free audit. You get each team member to take it. They take it autonomously. And then it generates individual scores. And then what I can do is I can then give it to the lead guy or whoever wants it and calculate the whole team's score as a total score. So you've got individual scores, but what's your overall team think, the culture of our team and the culture of our church? So it kind of, it's probably a little too simplistic with 20 questions. I get that. But at least gives you a first read on, hey, here's really where our team thinks the culture is.
No, I think that kind of thing is good. It's a starting point, right? It's not like, hey, this is the end all and be all. It's like, hey, this is a conversation starter. And, you know, there's a little bit of like, so many churches aren't stepping back to ask any questions. And so 20 is better than nothing, or 20 is better than the questions you asked last month. And so, or didn't ask. So yeah, that's great. Now you mentioned it earlier, kind of tongue in cheek, but I would love to hear about this book that you've released. I'm super excited for it. Love people to pick it up, called Momentum, a step-by-step system for growing a healthy church. We were joking earlier, you know, a book I released last year, Church Growth Flywheel, five practical systems to drive growth at your church. Very similar, which is fantastic. And I really hope people will pick up a copy of it. But tell us about Momentum. Why did you write this book? And then who are you hoping will read it? That sort of thing. Give us a sense of what's going on with this book.
Sure. So you can get it at Amazon. Just, you know, type Momentum and then my name, Eric Smith, and it should help you out there. But I wrote the book. So a couple years ago, I just started developing this Momentum system, and I was utilizing it. And it's in essence an operating system, a step-by-step system to help grow a healthy culture. So Momentum focuses in on three specific areas. When I talk to people, I'm like, here's kind of our three objectives: to help your team get clarity of vision and make sure everybody on the team knows where we're going, to build relational trust within the leaders. Cause that is, if you don't have trust, you're toast. I don't care how good your systems are. I don't care how good your stage looks or whatever, if you don't have trust, I just don't believe it's going to last. Right. And then the third thing is we assist, it really assists the team in cultivating a healthy culture for sustained growth. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the three objectives, and it has five components and eight different tools that make up the overall momentum process. And I had developed this workbook, and I was utilizing it and helping some other church friends with it. And it kind of hit me last year, middle of the year, close to the fall. I said, you know, I need to write this into an easy to read book that a church could buy the book. Any church leader is who the book's for. Any church leader, they could buy the book, have their team read it, and they could actually implement the system themselves. Mm-hmm. Of course, I would argue, yeah, it's better if you have somebody who's a trainer that's helping you, but not everybody's going to do that. And I want to impact as many and help as many churches as possible. So it's really an easy read. It's only 80 pages. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a very simple guy. I'm from Mississippi.
No, it's good. Love it.
So it's a simple, easy read, quick read, but I wrote it really so that every staff member could, with virtually no experience, could read it and go, okay, I actually understand what we're doing and what we're trying to implement here. So it's just a system. It doesn't dictate what you do. It just creates a pathway mm-hmm. for you to implement the plan that you have in your church. And so ended up writing this book so that I could make it accessible and easy. So if I work with a church, I come in and I actually say, hey, everybody needs to read this book. So that gives me a fast head start because they all go, okay, we understand what you're talking about before you even started talking. Mm-hmm. But then we're able to really go deeper into it as I work with them, you know, as a consultant. So that's who it's for, every church leader. That's why I wrote it. I'm really excited about it. I'm hopeful that it will really, really help a lot of churches mm-hmm. go to the next level. So that's really the dream and the vision behind it, is just helping churches go to the next level. All of us have another step to take. All of us can go to another level. Mm-hmm. So, that's the dream behind it.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah, I would encourage people to pick it up, to drop by good old Amazon, where you could buy books and grab a copy. Again, just search Momentum and then Eric Smith, and you'll find that there. We'll also have links in the show notes about that so people can find that quickly. I'd encourage people to pick this up. I love, you know, the thing I can say as an author, the amazing thing about books is, and I know people are listening in know this, but the guy, you know, when people who write books, they take a lot of time, effort, and energy, and they compress a lot of information down into a really accessible format. And there's a lot to learn there. And so I'd encourage you to pick up a copy. And it sounds like the kind of thing that will work well for a team, the kind of thing you could pass around to, hey, you know, maybe get them for everybody on your team and say, particularly at, you know, 80, 90 pages, you know, why don't we read this month? It's not overwhelming, even at this time of year, to say, hey, why don't we read this and then come back a month from now, and then we can talk about next steps from there. So I would encourage people to do that. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show today. If people want to get in touch with you, Eric, what's the best way for them to do that, to kind of follow along, connect with you? Would that be at momentumswing.net? How can they connect with you if they've got questions?
Yeah, they can email me at eric.smith mm-hmm. at momentumswing.net.
Fantastic. That's great. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, Eric. Thanks so much for taking time out and encourage people to connect with you. Thanks for all the ways that you're helping churches really thrive.
Yeah, I loved it. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.